Accountants Are Sexy is back for another season, and this season we'll see our 100th episode. I want to take a moment to thank everyone that's helped so far. Every like, listen, subscribe, watch, all of it means the world to me. This season is sponsored by Charterpath. Charterpath is a charity designed to help the financial skills gap within nonprofits. I've recently joined their advisory board to help them on their mission to increase volunteering within the financial sector from only 10% to a very healthy 50%. If you want any more information on how you can be a part of this mission, then drop me a message or leave a comment or visit their website, charterpath.org. Now, are we ready to meet the guest? Right, so I'd like to introduce you to my guest, Jordan Vickery. If you're on LinkedIn, you probably will know Jordan. He gets about a bit. He's a marketer. He works with accounting firms. He works with tech firms or accounting tech firms. And he also is involved in the Digital Accountancy Show as well, which I am sure we're going to cover at some point during our conversation. So welcome to Accountants Sexy Change My Mind, Jordan.
Thanks for having me, Kelly. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's nice. We've only just really started talking. So we've had like two conversations now. So this has been nice. You're going to literally listen to us get to know each other a little bit more on this call. It's going to be interesting. But would you like to give a better explanation as to what you've done, your kind of history, and why you're in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is that I was originally meant to go down a career in accounting and tax. I initially got offered a job as an indirect tax consultant at Deloitte, but it sounded like so much fun that I had to turn it down and pursue a career in marketing instead. So I started out marketing, coaching and consulting services to accounting firms about 10 years ago. And then from there, found myself thrown into the world of marketing for SaaS companies, working with accountants. I've worked with names like Pixie and Ignition, then started doing work with the guys at Digital Accountancy Show, helping them to create their content strategy and figure out what should we be talking about at the event to get the right accountants in the room. And then more recently, the back end of last year, I started an agency along with Matt Wilkinson from BizInc, working with accounting firms that are looking to outsource their marketing, but also working with some of the accounting tech vendors as well that need support with their marketing in the accounting channel.
Brilliant, brilliant. It's we have a slight, but from our previous conversation, we have a slightly different approach to marketing. What would you explain is your style? Because people come from it from different angles. How would you explain your style?
Yeah, so I guess if I compare our style to how you would work with firms, right? Like the firms that we work with, they're ambitious, they want to grow, but they just don't want to do the marketing themselves, right? Like we're working with founders that they don't really have an interest in like writing their own content or managing their own social media profiles. They just want to hand it off to a trusted provider that can manage that for them. So our approach is to pretty much take over the entire marketing strategy, but to keep them involved in some way, right? Like it's not a complete handoff where they just say, run the marketing department, because that's never going to work. Like we need buy-in from the CEO of the firm. We need buy-in from the team members. So we typically have like a process of figuring out what their ideal clients look like, creating a strategy that resonates for everybody and makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then we just go and execute on that. And it's, you know, me and my team will deliver on that strategy. We'll report into the CEO to give them results and feedback on where it's heading. But we tend to find that the kind of firms that we work with aren't the ones that want to do any of it themselves, right? Whereas I think with you, it's slightly different, isn't it? You're more working with people that want to take part in their own marketing.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I'm all about ownership. So the people that I'm working with want to be in control, like you've mentioned, but they want to be a bit more hands-on. They might outsource, because I do believe that getting help in the right places is the right thing to do, but they don't want to outsource all of it. It's not a full function, marketing function that they need. It's just support. Yeah. So that's who I like to work with, because as I've explained to you before, I'm a nurturer and I just want to help them, help other people.
And I think picking on what you just said there as well about like the not needing the full marketing function, I think that's really important, right? Because it's easy for us as marketers to say every accounting firm needs to market, but actually like it's not quite true. Like it really depends on the firm and their goals, who their target clients are, what they're trying to achieve. And depending on that, like you might actually not need to do really any marketing at all. You know, tighten up your referrals process, get some nice reviews in from clients, deliver good work on time, you'll probably get, you know, a nice steady stream of new client referrals from that. And for a lot of firms, that might be sufficient. You know, that might be more than enough for them to grow from.
Yeah, I've lost count of the amount of times I've started that. Well, somebody's come to me for marketing and I've gone, right, well, let's look at your existing client base. And they're like, why? And I'm like, well, one of them, you might not be using it all. So you might not have enough business from the people that you're serving, which means that they're going to leave because they don't think that you're the right fit when actually you are the right fit. So let's get that sorted. And then the referrals process, people say that people have a weird opinion that referrals are not good business. They're brilliant business if you can communicate to your existing customers what you're all about.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're going to pass you all kinds of random crap. But as long as you're good with your brand, actually referrals are bloody marvelous. Half the work is done for you.
And I think as well, like I always ask accounting firms when I speak to them, like where do most of your new clients come from? And 99% of the time it's new client referrals.
Yeah.
And then if you say, well, how many referrals did you ask for in the last 3 months? It tends to be between zero and about two or three.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge opportunity in that alone, right? Like just to figure out how you can systemize and tighten up that referrals process to bring in some more of those ideal clients, because they are out there, right? And they're within your second degree network.
Yeah. And this also rings true for testimonials as well. How many testimonials have you actively asked for? Well, I did ask somebody to do a Google review like 3 months ago, but they never did it. And I'm like, well, come on, let's be a bit more proactive about this.
I was speaking to a payroll firm based out in the States, and he's got a really nice automated process for asking for Google reviews. And he said that they always get the review on the third email. So the first and second email always gets ignored and never responded to. And it's always on the third email that the client will actually leave a review. Yeah. I think that just goes to show the importance of just being consistent with, asking for these kinds of things in your marketing.
And not thinking that it's interfering with their day. Like people email me and I just, if it's not important at that moment, it won't get done. And I think it's the same for most business owners. It's not something, I'm not doing it on purpose. It's not because I don't want to. It's because it wasn't a priority then. So I think we need to remove that emotion of like thinking that they're begging, please leave a review. It's not like that. Just remind them, help you.
Exactly. And if people are happy with you, which I'm sure they are, then they're going to be more than willing to leave a review. If it's, it's just a case of timing it well. If they're super busy, you said, they're probably going to ignore it. It's low on their priority list, but they're happy with your service, so they don't mind being asked. They're going to be willing to leave a review if they get a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I know that you're quite keen to talk about, and as we've discussed previously, there are different ways of looking at this, is value ladders. Would you like to give your explanation of what a value ladder is?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess if I take a step back first and kind of address like the target market for accounting firms in general. I wrote about this on a LinkedIn post last week. So if you think about the market that you're in, it doesn't matter if you're a niche firm or a generalist firm. Mm. Out of everybody out there that's a potential client, the majority of them just aren't ready to work with you right now. That's just a fact of life, right? There might be like 2% that are ready to book a call with you and work with you today, 8% that might be ready to work with you in the short term, so in the next 3 to 6 months. But then 90% of the market, They're kind of like future clients. They might be ready to work with you in 12 months. Most of them will probably never work with you. Mm. So the kind of challenge with marketing accounting firms is that a lot of the marketing, especially the call to actions on a website, tend to say things like book a call, book a discovery session, which is great for the 2% of people that are ready to work with you right now. But what about the other 98%? They're not going to book a call today because it's just not right for them. They're not at that point in their journey to say, I'm interested in starting work for you. So the reason why we think value ladders is so important is because a value ladder basically gives a prospect three different options to choose from depending on where they are right now. So if you've got now clients who are at the very, very top of the ladder, the call to action and the option you want to give them is book in a consultation, book in a meeting. Let's see how we can help you. The second rung down on that ladder is for maybe clients. This is the 8% of people that might be ready to work with you in the next 3 to 6 months. And typically what we find works well there is some kind of like high intent lead generation asset. So some really, really relevant downloadable guide, training, scorecard or quiz that will help to qualify these people and then help them to understand a bit more about how you can help them. And then for the rest of the market, the very bottom rung of the ladder, what you really need is a way of getting these people onto your email list, because it doesn't matter if you build a huge following on LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram, you have no control over that. You know, I remember maybe like 5 to 10 years ago, everybody was building Facebook pages, and then overnight Facebook tanked the algorithm and people who had hundreds of thousands of followers couldn't reach them, you know, at all. And they lost all of that overnight. I'm not saying that is going to happen with LinkedIn, but it's a possibility, right? Like, you have no control over your following there. So if that's your only, audience, then that's a bit of a risk for me. So what we typically recommend firms do is they start building their email list. And one of the easiest ways to do that, the very bottom rung of the value ladder, is to have a weekly email newsletter. Mm-hmm. Now, a weekly email newsletter doesn't mean once a week you send out the world's most boring accounting and tax news. It has to be interesting. It has to be valuable. And weekly is the cadence that we recommend, because in all honesty, if you're sending out a newsletter on a monthly basis, it's not enough. People mm-hmm. will forget about you in a week, never mind 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So having a regular cadence of sending something out that's valuable to your prospects over a long period of time is what will eventually nurture them. So that when they become maybe clients, or when they become now clients, you're the accountant or tax advisor that they're going to turn to.
Yeah, I think newsletters, they used to be the bane of my life, because once again, they were just boring, and people were just sending out like letters, emails after email after email, but there was no purpose to them. Yeah. So I think that when I work with people, I try and get them to look at a particular focus. And I don't like to call it a niche, because niching is fine if you've got a very strong case for it, but most people haven't. But I do think they need to find a focus. So when they've found that focus, I think newsletters become easier, and the content that you put in it becomes easier to find, something actually tangible and real, and something that they want to want to read about. Whereas if you have too generic an audience, what are you going to post? What's it like? All you can then do is just put out tax information. And that's not interesting.
Yeah, it comes back to the point about like marketing to everybody is marketing to nobody. And if we translate that to email newsletters, it's writing to everybody is writing to nobody. So there has to be a focus. And, you know, it's not just your newsletter, it's your content strategy as a firm in general, like what you write about on LinkedIn, on your blog, on your newsletter. It has to be for a specific person. And like you said, it doesn't have to be a niche per se. It just has to be a real focus thing. And once you know what that topic is, I bet you can easily find like 10 to 15 subtopics underneath that you can write about, and find two or three different angles for each of those that you can use. And once you've done that, you've got a year's worth of content. And then it's just a case of recycling things. Like, don't be worried about saying something that you said before 3 months ago, because the reality is that people don't remember what you said 2 weeks ago, never mind 3 months ago.
Jordan, they read the headline, you're in their mind, but they haven't read it. I think, you know, have you heard the joke about when somebody admits to a murder every time they write a recipe online? Because you never read that first part of the blog, do you? You just scroll down to the...
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the same with some newsletters.
Yeah, and I think with newsletters, like a lot of people get them wrong. They approach them where they'll send out a list of blog articles or, you know, updates that maybe aren't that relevant. And that's not really the way to go. Like, I think to get newsletters right, you have to, first of all, give people the ability to get value from their inbox without clicking or going anywhere. Like, don't send them to a website to get the value. Let them get the value right there and then in their inbox. They're busy people. They don't just want to be clicking off here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Tell stories, you know, tell stories about interactions you had with clients and what you did and how that helped them. It doesn't necessarily need to be a blog updating them on the latest changes to XYZ. It can just be a story about a client that came in with a question and this is what you advise them on.
Yeah. It's examples of how we're working with other people. Then people visualize themselves coming to you with a problem. They see you fixing the problems that they have. And there is nothing more powerful than that. That's something I'm quite keen on, using the stories in your practice in part of your marketing. I don't think it happens enough. I don't know from your experience, but I often get pushback because they don't want to use the stories because they feel it's their information. But you can use that story without ever giving any like detail about who that person is in a very general way. But the story is still powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And stories are one of the most powerful parts of marketing, right? People want to hear your experience of working with other people, because as an accountant or a bookkeeper, you're working with many clients on a daily basis. And that's what your prospective clients want to hear about. They want to hear about the interactions you're having, how you're helping them, the types of things you're helping them with. Because when you can share that from the perspective of how you're helping others, it makes it much easier for prospective clients to then put themselves in that those shoes and think about how it could be helping them.
Yeah. So I want to come back because I want to dip into this value ladder stuff a little bit more. So value ladders, funnels, buyer journeys, these are all very similar things. And I think that because people use these terms, Russell Brunson, and just like devalue it all, or it comes across like, if I have a value ladder, then all of a sudden I'm going to be pricing everything at 1997, and then I'm just going to ram like tripwires in at every tripwire. By the way, is if you go to purchase something and then you don't want to, so then it sends you off down another path where you can purchase something else. So there are all these tactics that are used, and they give these real terminologies a bad name.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the industry and how we're using these terms?
Yeah, I think there's a select few digital marketers, of which one you've already mentioned, that have given a bad name to certain mm-hmm. aspects of marketing. I think the understanding of funnels and the buyer's journeys is often kind of misunderstood. So people think of it as this linear journey that people will take, like in order from the bottom step right through to the end step.
Yeah.
And they think that they'll go through like in a really, you know, fast way, like take the first step today and there'll be a client tomorrow. Yeah. It doesn't work like that in the real world. Like the reality is that people can join the journey or the ladder at any point in time that they choose, right? It very much depends on their individual circumstances and whether they're in the kind of moment for looking for a new accountant and changing accountants right now. If they're not, you can't force that. You know, you can definitely provide content that will help them to understand how you might be better, what you might do differently, the kind of value that you can add, but you can't change their decision about whether or not they're going to work with you today, no matter how many times you try and put them in front of a book a call button or something like that. So I think the concept
really
of the concept of value ladders really just to give a bit more of a framework to it, so that you do have these options available for people regardless of where they are in their journey. It's not a case of trying to squeeze people through a funnel and make it happen overnight. Like, this is not something that will transform your growth tomorrow. It's not going to, you know, generate 30 leads in 2 weeks' time. If anybody promises you that kind of thing, honestly, run a mile, because they're lying. Nobody can promise you to generate any number of leads in any amount of time.
I'm so relieved to hear you say that. It's something that I preach, and I think, you know, I know that's right. I know it's right, and I will not say anything otherwise. But it hurts a little bit, doesn't it, when you see all these people just promising the world, and you just think, oh, that's just mean. It's mean.
And it's a question I always get, like whenever we're onboarding a new firm, one of the questions they will always ask is, so when do you think we can see results from this? And the answer I give every time is, the honest answer is, I don't know. You know, I can give you some rough estimations as to how long it might be based on how it's worked for other firms. But the reality is that your firm, the clients that you want to target, your personality and the content that you're going to be creating is completely different to every other firm out there. So there are no guarantees about whether or not this is going to work next week, next month, next year. You know, we can put a system in place that we know can work, but ultimately it's up to the market to decide, right? Like, we can't guarantee that this will generate 30 leads next month. It's impossible.
Yeah, it's not a tap. So I've had this discussion with a client recently. They are specialists in the gaming field. There isn't too many people to benchmark from. It's not an overcrowded market. And we've done some amazing work. There have been some green shoots coming through from the SEO work we've done. But making that and growing it, it's not fast. It's not, you have to learn. You have to like turn stuff off. You know, like you have to go, that content's not landing. We need to do more on this. We need to expand the audience over here. And you need to play around with it. Marketing is it's almost like a game. It's a game, and you don't know the results. And I've been pressed. Well, how long is this going to take? I don't know. I wish I could have that answer for them.
Yeah. And I think the way you've got to look at this kind of marketing that we're talking about here, it's very organic, right? Like, it's a long-term strategy. We're not doing quick win tactics that might drive a few results here and there. Like, it's not like sending out a cold email to 1,000 people and maybe two or three will book a call. Like, if by all means, if that's what you need to do to get some clients, go for it. But it's not a long-term strategy, because every single month you'll have to repeat that same process to try and get the same results.
Yes.
And you're not building anything of long-term value. Whereas what we're kind of talking about here in terms of organic marketing, you know, content, building an email list, sending out regular email marketing, that is marketing with a view of building an asset. And that's an asset that will generate you results and hopefully income over a longer period of time. And
it compounds.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, the way that we always talk about marketing is that it has this compounding effect. And, you know, you'll have seen graphs before where, whether it's pensions or investments, and it kind of plateaus very, very slowly. Then all of a sudden you get this uptick. And that's typically how inbound marketing works, right? You have to put a lot of work in initially to build up some traction. And you might not see anything for 6 months. And then suddenly in month seven, it just starts to go like that. And then it will just continue to compound and snowball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard, especially when everything is so brand new. It's hard. If you've got people that you can benchmark on, if the industry's already been tested, if it's tested but not overcrowded, then great. You know, it's speed can the speed can increase. But if you're going after a market that hasn't got that already in it, if your brand isn't already established, if your website hasn't been up for very long, all of this just slows you down. So the more you can do it and the more consistent you are, which is another thing I think we agree on, the consistency of marketing, the better. That's when you're going to start to see results. It's about being consistent with it.
Consistency is one of the biggest success factors in marketing. Like if you can't be consistent, then it's impossible to build up any reasonable traction and expect to see any results. And I think with consistency, like, you've got to choose your consistency depending on where you are right now at this point in time. Consistency for you right now might mean I can only do, you know, two articles a month, or I can only post on LinkedIn twice a week. Mm. If that's your consistency, own that, run with it, be consistent with it. Don't try and do five posts a week if you can't be consistent with it and you're just going to get burnt out and drop off and, you know, lose all interest in doing it afterwards. Like, pick a consistency you can achieve. And then once you've got that consistency, look at how you can increase it.
Yeah. People misunderstand consistency. They think they need to show up all of the time on every single platform, and they show up without having the strategy in mind first, which drives me bonkers. So they show up brilliant, but what are they saying? It's all over the place. So they don't know who they're talking to, what they want to say, why they're saying it. So they're just producing content and what I explain to be like a hamster wheel. They're just running and running and running and running, and they don't know what works. So it goes back to Ford. I don't know, who's that person that said 50% of your marketing works, we just don't know which 50%. You can know, you just need to take time and watch what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always signals out there, right? I've started looking at using things like LinkedIn as a way to find out what content resonates with people. Mm-hmm. And then from there, that kind of informs the rest of my strategy. And if I put a post on LinkedIn about a topic and it gets great engagement, then I know that that's something I can write about in my email newsletter. And it's likely going to go down well based on the engagement that it got. And we see the same with our clients. You know, if you post something and it completely bombs and nobody's interested, maybe it bombed, or maybe it's just that the topic doesn't resonate. You know, look for those signals, look for that feedback.
Yeah. And there's so much intricacy when it comes to social marketing. Another problem I see with accountants is they'll put out some phenomenal content and they won't have the audience there that would engage with it. Like, they haven't actually worked on who's seeing it. So they put out this amazing content. You're like, yeah, that's excellent. But nobody's interested because they haven't reached out to them.
No. And I think with social media, it's got this, people assume social media is just about posting content, when actually posting content is probably 30% of social media. The rest of social media is how are you connecting and adding followers that fit in your target market, and how are you engaging with other people both in your target market and outside your target market. Like, I would say engagement is as important on social media channels as posting, especially in the early days when you're building your own audience. Because if you don't have anyone to see your content, then don't waste time creating a ton of new content. Find time to engage with other creators, other people in the industry that you want to target, and build a following that way. And then once you've got people that are following you and engaging with you, that's when you can start to post more of your own content. And that's when you're likely going to see better results from it.
Yeah. And if you don't like social media, and I've had this argument plenty of time, don't do it. No. There are other ways to get business. You don't have to do social media. However, SEO and ads typically longer, more expensive. So you choose. What do you want?
Yeah, and I think that comes back to, like, what are the goals of the firm and, like, what's the strategy? Because it's not just a case of like kind of putting your finger in the air and choosing a channel and going, SEO sounds like it could be good fun. Let's spend some money there. Only do that if it makes sense based on the clients that you want to win and the service that you're offering, right? Like SEO typically tends to make sense if you're a local accountant trying to build clients in a local vicinity, or you've got a specialist niche and there's high enough search volumes for accountant in that particular niche. For example, accountant for dentists or accountant for marketing agencies. If there's, you know, sufficient enough search volume to warrant investing time in content, on-page optimization, building backlinks to bring in a few clients, by all means explore that. But more often than not, it's not the case. You know, having some foundational SEO in place to bring clients in locally might be good, but typically as a channel, it might not always be the best one for firms.
So I want to move on to Daz in just a second, but I want to refresh on this value ladder, because there is different types of content that you need to build at different points in this to help gain the credibility, trust, the education. So have you got an overview of what an accountant might look to, or a starting point where they might look to create their own strategy?
For a value ladder?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would start by, first of all, defining what clients you want to target. You know, who are you looking to win in terms of new business? Are they in a particular sector? Is there a specific service offering? Are they a particular size of business? Are there some particular attributes that you're looking to target? So if I give you an example, I recently helped create a strategy for a firm in Canada, and they're looking to win clients in a few different sectors. But the uniting attribute between them all was that they were ambitious business owners doing over $1 million in revenue that just needed better visibility into the numbers within their business. Mm-hmm. It wasn't saying this is just for, you know, a marketing agency, or this is just for an IT firm. It's like, that's the defining attribute that combines them. And therefore,
you can niche by goal as well. I'm a big, big fan of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think once you've got some clarity around what that looks like, then moving into the next phase of the strategy is basically saying, now that we know who we're targeting, what's going to be the best way to target them? You know, are they likely to be spending time on channels like LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter? Is it worth doing some SEO research to determine if SEO is a channel that's worth using to target them? Are there other channels worth pursuing? For example, events within that particular sector that they might be attending, niche websites that allow you to write content for them and put in front of their audiences, podcasts that you can go and guest on and get in front of people. There's a number of different ways. It doesn't just have to be social media.
Yes.
And I think once you've understood that, and then the next thing is really just figuring out, like, well, what do you want to be known for? Like, what do you want to be known for to that particular target market? And that's ultimately what then drives your content strategy. So once you know what you want to be known for, it's very easy to figure out what to write about, because you just write about that exact thing.
And how unique do you have to be when you're thinking about what you want to be known for?
You don't have to be all that unique, because the reality is that your personality and your take on this is what makes you unique. Like, me and you are not the first people to talk about marketing for accountants, and we're definitely not going to be the last.
Yeah.
You know, there's been many people before us and many, many people before that.
Yeah.
But we're both unique in terms of the value that we bring to the people that we work with, because we have our own experiences, our own personality, our own viewpoints and ways of doing things. And that's what makes us unique and makes us stand out.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I hate USPs. I hate the expression. It really throws people. They just think, I have to be something entirely different. And you're like, well, how different can you be? You're an accountant. Like, how different can you possibly be? So I think that just it makes people worry, and I don't think they need to. It's more about how you deliver it, who you are, what conversations can you have, your personality, and your credibility and experience within that particular field. Bring that out, bring that to the conversation.
Yeah. And the clients that you work with, share your own client stories. They're your stories with your clients, and nobody else has those. That's what makes you unique.
Yeah. Love it. So how excited are you, like, for Digital Accountancy this year? Because it looks huge and phenomenal.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. I mean, hats off to Dan and James, who run the show. They've done an incredible job so far, you know, packing out the Tottenham Hotspur ground for 2 years in a row, so much so that having to move to a new venue now at Battersea Evolution, which is going to be the biggest digital accountancy show so far. The production level at this event is going to be unlike anything you've ever seen at an accounting conference. I can pretty much guarantee that.
Yeah.
And we're working incredibly hard to try and bring a really fresh and different lineup of speakers and content program to the event to make it just stand out and, you know, be super, super valuable for the people that want to attend.
Amazing. It's Battersea Power Station, is that right?
It's Battersea Evolution. It's nearby. It's in the park.
Right.
I'm from Chesterfield, so London's not my strong suit. It's just one big city with a few parks and a few.
Is that right? So last time I was there, just next to Battersea Power Station, I was at a snow festival, weirdly. Okay. Had a mega big ski slope jump. Like, people were snowboarding, skiing. It was really, wow, really weird. Called the Freeze Festival, I think it was called. Nice. But the venue looks phenomenal, and there is a lot of hype around this. When will we know about the speakers? When's that information coming out?
So we're adding speakers to the program, to the website, pretty much every week now.
Okay.
And then we're going to be launching the full program, hopefully sometime towards the end of March, early April. So we're just adding the speakers at the moment. And then once we've got all of the sessions completely confirmed and mm-hmm. lined up, we'll launch the program in one go for people to see.
Fantastic. And you've done really well with the pre-sale. People have already started registering. I can't remember the numbers. So you tell me, how many people and how can people get hold of tickets?
Yeah, it was just over 500 registrations in the first couple of days, which was incredible. If people want to find out more about the event and sign up, just go to digitalaccountancy.com and you'll see a link or a big banner for Digital Accountancy Show on there. Click on the link and then just sign up for the show.
Fantastic. And will you be at the after party? Will you be DJing the after party?
I believe me and Dave Selleck will be DJing the after party again, yeah.
Fantastic. I'm going to come and watch. So I've got two more questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, what is the PECA?
That's a question you never thought you were going to ask on a podcast, isn't it?
No, because I thought I knew.
Yeah. So last November, I was working in Australia with a good friend, Trent McLaren, and we were working together and he kind of stopped me. He's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, you're typing with just one finger on either hand. And I never realized that I type like that, just like this, with just one finger.
Oh, wow.
And it really, really confused me and almost paralyzed me to the point that I forgot how to type momentarily.
Yeah.
So I went on Google and I searched for this, and it turns out it's actually a thing, and it's called hunt and peck typing. So it's where your fingers hunt for the keys and then they peck down on the ones they want to hit. So I put a post on LinkedIn basically saying that I'm a pecker. And I think that I could actually be the world's fastest pecker, because despite only typing with one finger on either hand, I can still do 82 words a minute because I went and tested it. So if anyone would like to challenge me on that, any fellow peckers listening that think they can beat my record of 82 words per minute, please give it a shot. I'd like to see video evidence that this was completed. And if so, then I owe you a drink.
And that, if we can get that in before Digital Accountancy Show, then you can go and tap him up and he will buy you that drink. So we need the evidence.
Yeah.
So calling all peckers.
We'll have a peck off at the after party.
My nan would be rolling in her grave, honestly. She made me type "the quick brown fox jumps over the whatever it is, the lazy fence" or whatever it is, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. I cannot tell you how many times I wrote that. So I'm okay. I'm okay with typing. Not a pecker.
No, you're one of the fancy touch typists.
Oh yeah. Yeah, touch typist. I'm mostly accurate as well. Mostly. And I can spell if I'm typing, and I cannot spell if I'm writing. Like it just isn't there.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's nuts. So last question for you, Jordan.
Yeah.
What is the sexiest thing about accountants?
Oh, that is a good question.
You can't come on a show like this without being asked. Come on.
No, yeah. Maybe I should have listened to you ask this to all the other guests.
Yeah. This always catches people out. I know who's been listening by how prepared they are.
You've caught me off guard. I would say the sexiest thing about accountants is how much they love each other as a community. And I'm selfishly saying that because it's one of the things I absolutely love the most about working with accountants and the accounting tech community is that it is exactly that. It's just one big community, and everybody in there is looking out for each other and is willing to share ideas and help each other and, you know, share what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them, and just be really open and transparent like that. And I think that there probably aren't many industries that are like that.
No.
And it always amazes me just how many accountants are willing to give up their time to talk to other accountants, talk to people in the industry and share, you know, their experience. And that's one of the things I love. And actually, it's probably one of the things that makes them sexy.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. It's why I'm here. I've often said this. I had a choice to make. I could go down the law firm route, or I can go down the accounting route. And I just looked at the accounting space and I was like, no, that's a much nicer environment. And I'm not got anything against lawyers, but the accounting space is something special.
Yeah. I'm sure the lawyers are friendly. They'll just bill you per hour for the conversation.
They don't make quick decisions. That was the real clincher for me. Weirdly, although accountants are typically more risk averse and they're very considered in what they do, they can still make a decision quite fast, and they can turn, you know, they can turn on that decision penny, whatever it is. But with lawyers, it will go through a system, and it is, and by the time you've got to the end of that system, moment's over, it's gone. Like, you can't do anything with it anymore. Right. So it's been a pleasure. It's been a real pleasure. I'm going to put all your links to DAS and LinkedIn on the podcast so people can connect with you, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And any last thoughts before we go, or anywhere else that you'd like to direct them to?
Yeah, I write a weekly newsletter, of course, because it's part of the value ladder. That I send out every Friday with actionable and helpful tips to help you improve your marketing. So if you're interested in signing up for that, just go to my LinkedIn profile. You'll find a link there to subscribe. And I'll be sending out the next one this Friday.
Perfect. Well, this is going out tomorrow. So I hope they come and join you. Well, thanks ever so much.
Thanks so much, Kelly.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. We've got a ton more guests already lined up, and I can't wait to share that with you. Please also remember to check out our sponsor, Charterpath. They're bridging the gap between financial skills and the nonprofit sector. And if you're looking at growing your practice and wondering what is the next step for you or how to do that, maybe you want to check out Accounting Pirates as well. We've got a treasure chest of support there that might be able to help you get to your next level.